Thank you very much, Andre. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the Cross-Community Working Group on Use of Country Territory Names as TLDs meeting on the 10th of June 2014. On the call today, we have Paul Schindler, Ron Sherwood, Han Leun, Henry Chan, and Mariana Tajik. We have apologies from Daniel Kalchev, Anne Westlands, Liz Fuhr, and Olga Cavalli sent her tentative apology. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Bart Buswinkle, Christine Nordstrom, and myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Paul.
Thank you very much. I apologize. As I mentioned to Bart previously, I'm remotely located at the moment, so I would appreciate if he could steer us through the first few administrative parts of the agenda, et cetera, because I don't have that in front of me, but certainly happy, Bart, to work through some of the back history of the study group, et cetera, if it's actually going to be beneficial for the purposes of this call, given the relatively few attendees.
Yes, thank you, Paul. And maybe just for you, say the agenda is a welcome introduction. So maybe you provide an introduction by the co-chair. So it's maybe provide a bit of the background of why you got involved and your role. Then review of charter and study group. So I'll do that. I had a presentation going into some of the details of the charter, so everybody is aware of how this working group is foreseen to interact with the SOs and ACs, the participating SOs and ACs, and its internal mechanisms, etc. And then a little bit maybe on the background and the results of the study group itself. Again, I think we need to stress that people who participate should read the report, the final report of the study group, because that is the starting point of the work of this working group. And then a little bit discussion on the face-to-face meeting in London and what we intend to achieve from there, a little bit maybe the agenda, and then closure. So if you just give a bit of background, say, on your role and your interim role, et cetera, and why you got involved, so people understand. Most of them on the call are from the CCNSO, so they are aware, but especially for the others.
Well, thank you very much, Bart. This is Paul Schindler again. Yes, I was the chair of the previous Country and Territory Names Study Group, as it was so named, that was established by the CCNSO Council back in, I believe, December 2010. That study group was somewhat of an experiment in what has now led to cross-constituency engagement, and in as much as it drew members from across ICANN. It was the group was established in the acknowledgement that there's need for study required into how country and territory names are used within the ICANN environment. Acknowledgement that they're used in different ways or could possibly be used in different ways in terms of IDN CCTLDs, new GTLDs, the existing CCTLD framework. That was basically the genesis of this work, and an acknowledgement by the CCNSO Council that perhaps some work should be done in assessing whether the way country and territory names are treated is consistent, if there's a desirability for consistency, and if so, where we should go from there. Acknowledging that it was originally a group established by the CCNSO Council, that is the group that that is the council that we reported back to, and it didn't have any presupposition of resolutions or subsequent actions. It was, as the name suggests, a study group to look into an issue that had appeared and not necessarily make any conclusive findings, but be as constructive as possible in terms of outlining next steps. My personal interest, well, the use of country and territory names is not particularly contentious from an Australian perspective. However, we do have five or six extraterritorial CCTLDs. That's not unique to us. The Dutch and the French have that certain circumstance as well. However, it was just an interesting subject to look into. As I said, that group was convened or formed by Council in December 2010, and we really commenced our work about a year or so later, in early 2011, with the aim originally of providing a final report towards the end of 2010. However, it ended up being a little bit later than that and being mid-2013. But I don't want to go too much further into that at this point because I'll go preempt the outcomes of the group and that which I wish to discuss later.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Any questions to this so far for Paul? I don't see any hands up in the Adobe room or anybody online. Okay, thank you. Natalie, could you put up the slides, please? I sent you. Thank you. And again, I'm sorry, this may overlap with some Paul already said, but I'll still run through it. Here they come. Yeah. Oh, you make me presenter. Great. Okay, this is just a bit about the charter itself, so what's in the charter and starting point, etc., and where we hope we'll be heading. So the purpose, again, this builds on the recommendations of the study group Paul has just mentioned. And now you can read it for yourself, but for Paul, the purpose is review the current status of representations of country and territory names under the current ICANN policies, guidelines, and procedures. Now, this is quite a mouthful for something that already happened by the study group, and it's more directing the study or the working group into further expand. So how are the different forms of country and territory names treated? The study group came up with a kind of a typology for country and territory names, ranging from the representation, say the full representation of the country and territory names, so the real official names, until some, country and territory names are represented in local languages, not even in official or designated local designated languages from a territory. And there is quite a range of different types, including, for example, historical names. And it depends very much. And say, if you look at the current rules in the for the CCTLDs and for the GTLDs, first of all, they treat it differently, and secondly, some of these names on the typology, or some of the categories on the typology, are included and some are excluded. And say that was one of the major findings, I would say, from the study group. So it's first developing the typology and then see how they apply in the different under the different set of rules and identifying some issues. So the task of the working group will be to further explore and analyze this part of the results of the study group. And then secondly, and that's in the charter as well, it's a combination of two goals, in fact. First of all, check whether it's feasible to develop a harmonized framework on the use of country names. As I just said, we The study group developed a typology with different categories of domain names, and I think one of the major tasks of the working group will be is to check which are the most appropriate ones and which aren't, and as a kind of framework, and then understand what the implications are, and if the working group is able to develop such a universal or a framework, then try to develop some details how they could be applied and what the impact will be under the different set of rules, and then based on that, say that would be the complete framework, present this to the different SOs and ACs, and from there submitted to the participating SOs and AC. I see Heather is on there as well. So that's more or less the purpose of this working group, based on the recommendations of the study group, and which has been embedded in, or which is now part of the charter and the purpose of this working group overall. Now, what is important probably, because geographic designations are used in say, for different purposes in the ICANN environment, and because we're dealing with ccTLDs and gTLDs, what is very important to understand is that this working group will only be focusing, according to its charter, and that's the scope, on representations of names of countries and territories listed on or eligible to be listed on the Alpha 2 Code International Standard. The reason is, in order to make very clear, there is, say, a common subset of names which are dealt with in the under the new GTLD policy and policies relating to the selection of ccTLD strings, and that's those, and that's the common demeanor, I would say, that is just the countries and territories names listed, or the countries and territories listed on ISO 3166. So if a territory is not listed on ISO 3166, then it's excluded. It means the framework, whatever will be developed, is not applicable. And the main reason is, say, these geographic designations are in principle not eligible as a ccTLD, and therefore only new GTLD rules apply if they're only eligible for new GTLDs if the rules permit so. So that's a very important scope. So I'll reaffirm this in the next slide. And secondly, what's very important to understand for the scope, we only talk about country and territory names as top-level domains. What is happening at second-level domains, that is, say, for GTLDs, is a matter of policies and discussions in the ICANN environment. And for ccTLDs, it's something in, say, which is dealt with locally. So again, that is excluded of the scope of this working group. So again, there it is. So out of scope, other geographical indicators such as regions and the use of country and territory names as second or lower level or other level. Now, the deliverables, and this is in preparation, I would say, already for the face-to-face meeting in London. Looking at the charter, what needs to be delivered is, first of all, a work plan and a tentative schedule. It's very clear that, at the early stages of the life cycle of a working group, a work plan can only be tentative, and the schedule as well. But it's included in order to make the working group members realize that they need to focus on concrete deliverables. and work against a certain timeline and planning in order to make some progress. The second deliverable, and that's maybe too early at this stage, but will be in the future, is especially progress papers to inform the community on progress made by this working group. And the chairs or the co-chairs of the working group will inform, say, on a regular basis, should inform on a regular basis the participating SOs and ACs. And there is a mechanism in the charter on, say, building a final report going from an interim report, say, where could be interpreted as describing issues and some tentative direction of solutions, if any, for public comment. A final paper, which could be a draft final paper, and this final paper will be submitted to the participating SOs and ACs. And once the participating SOs and ACs support or endorse the recommendations and the output of the working group, it will be included in the final report, and that will be resubmitted. But then everybody, just to ensure that all participating SOs and ACs and the working group are clear that, say, the recommendations are supported and that is documented. Say, if one of, and now I'm moving forward, if one of the participating SOs and ACs, and now I'm talking about closure, if one of the participating SOs and ACs does not agree with the recommendations of the working group, the working group has the opportunity to update or amend its recommendations, taking into account the concerns of that participating SO or AC. This is not mandatory. It's a decision of the working group. So I could imagine that, say, if there is very strong opposition and there is no room to bridge the gap, then the working group will submit its final paper, including, say, the disagreement or non-support of one of the SOs and ACs, and submit it to the SOs and ACs. On the other hand, it could also, as I said, update its supplemental or its recommendations and submit it in a supplemental paper. So that's the amended recommendation. It includes the amended recommendations and submit it again to all SOs and ACs to seek their endorsement. So once the final report, so that is final paper, non-endorsement or endorsement of SOs and ACs is submitted, the working group will formally close. Now let me take a step back, say, before, because that was the closure of the working group. If you look at the operations of the working group, again, as I said, reporting on progress is considered to be very important, so both to the participating SOs and ACs and to the community, in the format of progress reports. What is important as well, say, is the internal decision-making of the working group. Again, there is a very simple and non-consensus rule, which more or less reflects that a bit of the experiences of the CCNSO cross-community working groups initiated by the CCNSO. It is a consensus rule where the co-chairs determine whether there is consensus or non-consensus, and the underlying and criteria is that say if there is really strong objection, then it's clear there is no consensus of one or two. So it's a bit of a qualitative consensus rule. And there is always the opportunity, if to move forward of that, or they should be recorded, the minority position. So the minority position could be of one person, but also could be of more, and which has proven to be very workable is that for every document before there will be a say consensus call or sense of whether there is consensus, that at least two readings of a document needs to precede such a call. So you can see and that worked pretty well in some of the more contentious working groups which I participated as staff and supported as such. So at least two readings of documents, and then the usual rules about adjustment and update of charter, and as I said, final report by the working group for and to be submitted to the SOs and AC. Now moving on, we just discussed closure, and then post-closure again. As soon as the final report is submitted to the SOs and ACs, that's the closure of the working group. As of that moment, the participating SOs and AC, if there are recommendations to follow up, they should follow up. It's the role of the participating SOs and ACs to follow up. So that's out of scope of the working group itself. So that could be share the information with the community, inform the board, launch a new working group, if necessary, launch a PDP. I could imagine the case, for example, where based on the recommendations of the working group, the CCNSO could revisit the IDN PDP or take it into account in the review of the IDN PDP policy as still as proposed to the ICANN board. So that may be. So that's the. These are just examples, but you can see and you get the drift of how the mechanisms of the charter work. And finally, and I think that's very important as well, that there is no role for the working group to monitor and review implementation, if any. This is a role of the SOs and ACs and where they how they could they should organize the follow-up of that monitoring and review of the recommendations and the implementations. That was about it around the core of this charter. Are there any questions? None? Okay, thank you. I've noted that Heather is on the call as well. Oh, yeah. I see a question from Chris. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Bart. I was just wondering, we're talking about the post-closure. Are you telling us that in the way that this is different from normal procedures? Because I'm not quite sure. Or are you really telling us...
No. It's one of... Sorry, Chris. No, absolutely not. It's just to make clear, it's if you would take a 10,000 feet view of the working group and say from initiation to closure, that's fine, that's all dealt with in the charter, but in afterlife of any working group there is an implementation phase as well, if at all, and it's just to make very clear that's out of scope of this working group, and how it's going to be dealt with is in fact up to every SO and AC.
Thank you. Yep.
Any other question?
Bart, it's just Paul here again. Not so much a question, but a point of clarification. Made a very short, sweet summary with regards to the activities of the study group that led into this working group. I certainly welcome if any... And I did so noting that many of those people on this call have been involved in the study group process. I'd also welcome questions on how we arrived at where we are at now and expand upon that summary of the study group's workings if anybody sees that of any value, though I believe currently pretty much everyone here has been involved previously, but I don't wish to gloss over it. I just want to reiterate that invitation.
Yep. So any questions on the study group itself and the results of the study group? No, I don't see any hands up or anything in the chat. So let me scroll back on, and hope you don't get seasick, on the deliverables. I think that's a good starting point for the next part of the discussion and of this call. The working group will have its first face-to-face meeting in London. I can't recall the timing, etc., but I think it was on Thursday morning, isn't it, Marika?
Yes, that's correct. 8 o'clock.
Yeah, 8 o'clock. So quite a challenge after the social event, probably, but still 8 o'clock it will be. And I think looking at, say, deliverables, I think, say, in my view, it would be very good, and from a support staff view, it would be very good if we could start the discussions around a kind of work plan, and that would include, say, the first of all, say, the deliverables, say, how we want to move forward regarding the first item, so that's further reviewing the impact of say country and territory names on the different rules and rule sets, and attach a bit of a timeline, etc., to it. And secondly, and related, is a bit about around the frequency of meetings of this working group. So one of the things I think Marika and I noticed, there is a bit of a different pace in, say, between the CCNSO and the GNSO and people working in the GNSO and the CCNSO. That needs some further discussion. I think another one... So these would be my major items and for the meeting on Wednesday or Thursday morning. I don't know, Heather or Paul, if you want to add another one, or Marika.
Bart, this is Paul. Unless somebody else wants to jump in, no, I think. Those are the major issues that need to be covered. It's a necessity that the first meeting be largely administrative in nature, and I expect that those of us that have been assisting with the formation of this working group will have the skeleton of a work plan and a schedule available, so we're not looking at a blank canvas, but rather we'll have some ideas outlined. Everybody will go through their respective introductions and affiliations, and then into expectations of this group. There may be the need to, again, given the limited number of participants on this call, cover some of the material we already have done in terms of how this working group came to be. But there will be a few issues in terms of our working methods, chairpersonship, etc., to be reconfirmed. Doesn't mean it will be any less worthwhile a meeting, but something that I think will be worth setting the scene. One of the points I wanted to reiterate was something that Bart raised earlier about the study group that we went through. The process there was not prescriptive. There was no predetermined outcome. We described as best we could where we thought the study group was going to go, and in the end it was relatively accurate. So I invite everyone to, in considering a draft work plan, if the outcome seems a little bit amorphous, if it seems a little bit uncertain, I welcome people to either provide clarification where they can or accept that this is not a prescriptive process either. We don't quite know exactly where it is going to end up, and I want everyone to keep that in mind. It doesn't make the process any less valuable, but it's something that I just wanted to put on the table, part of our discussions that we'll have in London on the work plan front and centre. So that's all I had to add, but...
Heather, you want to add something? Yeah?
Yes, please. May I? I think I'd like to build on Paul's comment, if I may, and say I think it's important, Paul, that you and I articulate as well from our respective groups and going forward our position, that indeed the formation of a study group was not envisioned the formation of a working group was not envisioned when the or in any way predetermined when the study group kicked off. This was the recommendation that there be a working group was indeed something that we came to after a fair bit of discussion over quite a lengthy period of time. So I hope that would allay any fears that there's any sort of predetermined outcome as to what we're doing. In regards to London, I fully support what's been said. I think it's important that process be dealt with, that the SOs and ACs involved feel as if they understand what's going on and the expectations are clear from the beginning. So,
thank you, Adam. Marika, you want to add anything?
This is Marika. No, I think I'm all good. Just to note, you know, Bart, you and me can maybe start working on you know, indeed the skeleton that the chairs can then review, so indeed we have something to look at in London.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, then. Are there any other questions, et cetera? I think we got the tone set for the working group. We have a kind of a skeleton for an agenda in London. Everybody is aware where we're heading, if at all. Any other questions? Any other points?
Yet again, at the risk of monopolizing the call, but it is Paul here again. Just to reiterate to everyone, I assume I'm telling staff something that they were already going to do, that obviously the circulation of the recording of this call, given the limited attendance, is quite important, and I invite everyone's patience when we get back to London, because as you can appreciate, many people will be covering these materials for the first time and didn't do so on this call. And that's pretty much all I had to add, other than look forward to seeing everyone in London.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I thank you for attending this call and looking forward to seeing you in London. Natalie, can you stop the recording?
Yes, of course, Andre, you may now stop the recording. Thank you very much for your support.
Okay.